The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parashas told us. The Torah starts out by telling us that Abraham gave birth to Yitzchok. Yitzchok married Rivka, and they finally had a child after many, many years. By Yisrotzetzu, this is in Pasuk Chof Beis, by Yisrotzetzu Habonim Bekirbo, and there was tremendous turbulence going on with Rivka. And she said, it was an abnormal amount of tsar, amount of turbulence and pain. And she went to Sikar Hashem to find out. She went actually to Shem to find out what's happening. Vayemar and Hashem. And through Shem, a prophecy came back. Shnei goyim bevitneich. You should know this is not an ordinary birth. First of all, it's twins. But secondly, shnei goyim bevitneich. There are two nations. And it's written geyim without shnei goyim, see, bevitneich, two nations, and it's written without above. The Gemara darshans, the Medrash darshans, geyim. From the word go'er, which means not only nations, but very, very noble nations. Ushneilu umin mime'ayach yiparedu. And further, these are empires, great empires. And mime'ayach yiparedu, when they come out of the womb, they will each go in a totally different direction. And one will gain its strength from the other. Malchu mi malchu yiskaf. Lo yishvu bigdulosom, they will never reign together. Kishaseh komz en nefel. When one will rise up, the other one will fall. The Medrash brings, this is what it states, is leinismalet sur el michubonis shel Yerushalayim. Tyre will be built up through the destruction of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim will be built up through the destruction of his cities. V'rav yavon tzair, and in the end of days, the older one will serve the younger one. Now, this was referring to Yaakov and Esav. Came time for them to give birth, for them to be born. The first one came out. He was red. He was full of hair. And they called him Esav because he was like totally, he was very, very physically mature. He was already totally complete. And afterwards his brother went out. And his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav. This was a sign that at the end of days he shall overtake him. Vayikrashmo Yaakov. His name was called Yaakov because he was holding on from the word Ekev, heel. And Yitzchok was 60 years old at that time. Vayigdol ha'no'orim vayeh Esav isha de'atzayit isha de'. And the two lads grew up. And Esav was a hunter, a man of the field. Yaakov was a person of perfection and a person of upright, sterling character, man of truth, Yosheva Olim, who dwelt in the tents of Torah. Vayav Yitzchok es Esav kitzai b'fiv. Yitzchok loved Esav. Kitzai b'fiv, simple sense means he was a hunter, he would bring him all types of good food, but what he actually means is because he was a master when it came to Ramos, when it came to to trickery, when it came to dishonesty, Esav was a master. And therefore, he used to always mislead his father, Yitzchok. Well, Yitzchok thought he was a great tzaddik, a very, very righteous person. Rivka Eveses Yaakov. Rivka loved Yaakov. She saw through this, and she saw what Yaakov was. She loved him. Then the Torah goes further and tells us the story about when Esav came from the field and he was starving, he needed something to eat. And Yaakov said, I will give you this from this red porridge, but you have to sell me your rights of the firstborn, which he did. Further, the Torah tells us that it came time for Yitzchok. He was afraid that one day he might die. He was getting old. He said he has to now give over the brachas. He wanted to give the brachas to Esav, who was the firstborn, and this was the one that he loved most of all. And Rivka came, and she told Yaakov to disguise himself and to go and take the brachas. Now from these two sons were to come two of the greatest empires the world has ever seen. One was Esav. From Esav came such empires. The most famous empire was Rome, Edom. Rome was the father of Western culture. All of the European nations. Came Amalek from him. So on. And from Yaakov was to come Israel, the nation that would go to Har Sinai and bring Torah to the world. And this is what was meant, that Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. These are nations, these are not individuals. And Geim, great nations of nobility. From them will come kings and princes. And Ula'ay Milom Yamots, empires, and they will never reign equally. They will be totally contrary to each other. Now we've spoken many times, many shurim, on this. This evening, I want to dwell on one particular aspect where perhaps we can understand the power of Esav a little better. And that is from a medrash which is in Parshas Lech Lecha. We go back to Parshas Lech Lecha, Perek Tes Vov, Pasuk Tes. This is long before they were born. During the time of Avraham, Hashem came to Avraham and he said, Vayeme Elov, Kecholi Egla Meshuleshes. He said, take an egla, a calf, three of them, Be'ez Meshuleshes, and three goats, Va'ail Meshulesh, and three rams, Visor V'Gezol, and also a dove and a turtle dove. Yikach leyas kol eila, and Abraham took all of these, vayivater eisom batovich, and then he split every one into two, vayitin ish bisre lekras reihu, and he set each one down where half was facing the other half, vesat sipor levosor, but he did not split the birds. Vayirir ha'ayir halabagorim, vayashiv eisom Abraham, and a bird, like a vulture, came down and wanted to eat these animals. And Abraham chased it away. ויהי השמש לבוא ושדה מנופלה על אברהם. Then it became dark. The sun set, it became dark. And Abraham fell asleep, into a deep sleep. And he had a prophecy. And he was taken with a strong terror. And darkness, a great darkness, fell upon him. And Hashem told Abraham, Yodea teida ki gei azar chaberes leilahem. You should know that your children will be strangers in a land which is not theirs, Vavodum Vinosam, and there they will be enslaved, and there they will be afflicted. This was referring to when they would go to Egypt. Arba Mea Shona, 400 years. Vagama Sagaya Shiyavodu Donanechi. This nation that shall do this to them, I shall judge. And afterwards they will go out with great wealth. You will never see this. You will be buried at a good ripe old age. Then eventually the fourth generation afterwards will return to Eretz Yisrael. This was the prophecy he had. And now the sun came up again, but it was dark. And a fire came, a great fire, and it went through the path which was made between the two halves of all of these animals. And by Emahu Koras Hashem as Abram Bris Lemor. It was at this time that Hashem made a covenant with Abram. He promised that you will have the land of Eretz Yisrael, and all of these nations will be driven out. This was known as the Bris Ben Abesorim, the covenant of the pieces. Because all of these animals, after he shechted them, they were divided in two. The Medrash brings, here in Parshas Lech Lecha, what did he show Abraham? There were a number of things which Hashem showed Abraham, but one in particular was Herulei Dalet Malchiyos. He showed him the four great empires that would stand up. And all of these four great empires would try to destroy Israel. Kecholi Egla Mishulash Zubavl. The Egla, the three calves, this was a symbol of Bavel, the Babylonian Empire. Shemidu Shleisha Malachim. And from them came three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Avil, Merudach, and Belshazzar. Three kings came from Babel. This was the Babylonian Empire, the first great empire. They stood up against Israel in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, and they destroyed the first Beis Hamikdash. The Eish Mishuleshes, the three goats, Zumodai. This was a symbol of Modai. That was the Syrian-Persian Empire. Shaisa Mahmid Gimel Malachim, they also gave rise to three kings, Kadesh, Vidaryovish, Vachashverus. This was the kingship which eventually Achashverus was. And this was the time of Purim, where Haman came. Haman was really not from that nation, he was from a different nation, but he had come. And he teamed up with Achashverus to destroy Kol HaYehudim, all of the Jews. Ael Mishulish, the three rams, Uyovan. This was the Greek Empire. Why? What does this three represent by the Greek Empire? Because the Greek Empire, under the leadership of Alexander the Great, went to conquer the entire world. And it states they conquered Kol Aruchais Kovshu, Ruach Mizrochis Le Kovshu. They conquered all of the world except the eastern part. So all three sides except the east. This is what the three represent. Vitor v'gozel, and what do the birds, the dove and the turtle dove, what do they represent? Zu Edom. This is Edom. This is the nations that would come from Esav, Rome. And the Greek Empire, they're the ones who stood up against Israel in Hanukkah. They invaded Eretz Yisrael, and they brought impurities to the Beis HaMikdash, And then there was Edom, the Roman siege of Israel 2,000 years ago, and they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and they carried Israel into captivity, and this is the Golus, this is the exile we're still in. They were represented by a tor v'gozel, by a bird. So the Medrash says, Torhu elesh gazlanu. Actually, it was one bird. It was a dove. So why does it say gozel? Because gozel means something else also. Gozel means a gazlan, a thief. A bird, but they are thieves. Now, we have what to clarify in this Medrash. Why did Hashem show Avraham the four Malchus, the four empires? And why is it they all were in the picture of an animal? And why is it that everyone was an animal except Esav? He was in the picture, he was the symbol of the bird. And also, what does it mean, Torhu el gazlanu? He was a tor, it's a bird, but a gazlan, a thief. The Maral explains this in the Gvuras Hashem, Perches. He says as follows, the Dalet Malchus, the four empires, these were the Roshim, these were the heads of all of the early nations, and they encompassed all of the nations of the world. And all of these four empires, Tomid, all of the time, are misnagdim. They are contrary. They stand against Abraham and his seed, Israel. And all of the time, they come and try to destroy the covenant which Abraham made with Hashem. This covenant was made by Hashem for Abraham and his seed. So therefore, at this point, where Hashem was making the covenant, the bond between he and Israel, he showed Abraham the four empires which they would have to contend with, which represented the nations of the world, those that would stand up against Israel. Now, just like they were great empires, the heads of great empires, Avraham also was a head of a great empire. He was the head of an empire called Israel. And Avraham was of such stature and such greatness and such perfection, and his seed to follow, that compared to the other empires was to like the comparison between a man and an animal. So this is why Abraham saw all of these empires as animals. He was commanded to divide them, cut each one in half. What did this symbolize? It symbolized the Nisuach, that his seed eventually would conquer them. They would stand up against Israel. They would try to destroy Israel. They would try to take away from Israel what was precious to them, the Beis HaMikdash, their kings, Eretz Israel, their Torah, their mitzvahs. But eventually, they will fall to Israel. And the sign of this was Abraham was commanded to cut each one in half. And also, at the end of this prophecy, he saw a fire come, and the fire went through the path which was formed by the two halves. Rashi brings from the Medrash, what was that fire? Shlucha shel Shechina. This was the messenger of Hashem, to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would help Israel to destroy all of them. But why was it that all of them was symbolized as an animal? And Esav, who was the strongest of them, the mightiest, he symbolized as a mere bird, a dove, a turtle dove. And also, the dove, Abraham was not instructed to divide, only the animals. The answer to that is like the Medrash says, Tor v'gozel, he took a dove and a turtle dove? No, it was just a dove. But Gazlan who? He's a Gazlan. He's a thief. We find two attributes in Esav. From one aspect, he was very, very great. He's called Bnei HaGodl, the great son of Yaakov and Rivka, of Yitzchak and Rivka. For example, later on, in our parashah told us, it says, in Chof Zayin, Perek Chof Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi ki zokein Yitzchak batichena einav mereis, when Yitzchak became old, and his eyes dimmed, and he could not see, Vayikras Esav b'no ha-godl. He called Esav his b'no ha-godl, his great son. And he said to him, Yitzchak called him the b'nai ha-godl, the great son. And Rivka also. In Pasuk Tesvov, it states, Vatikach Rivka's big day Esav b'no ha-godl ha-chamudus asherito b'abois. Rivka took the garments of Esav, her oldest son, her great son, B'no HaGodl, her big son, the very precious garments which he used to entrust to Rivka, to his mother in her house, Vatalbesh es Yaakov B'no HaKotan, and she clothed Yaakov, her little son, with them. So we see Esav was referred to as the B'no B'nei HaGodl, great son. Yaakov was referred to as the little son. And this is how people saw them. Esav was the great, the mighty. Esav was not a simple person. Had he been a simple person, Yitzchak would have never dreamt to give him the brochas. The whole eternity of Israel relied on these brochas. These were the brochas which Hashem came to, gave to Abraham, saying, "Bezaracho, through your seed, you will inherit the land, and you will go to Eretz Yisrael, you will go to Har Sinai to bring the Torah into the world." Now the question is, which seed was meant by that? It came through Yitzchak, but now was it going to be through Yaakov or Esav? So the whole eternity of Klal Yisrael and the world was dependent on this. Yitzchak would have not been prepared to give this to someone who was not who was a simpleton or someone who he viewed not capable. So he was a very, very great person. And a person of enormous strength, not only physical strength, but a person of enormous capabilities. And we see the Gemara brings an Avodah Zarah, the beginning of the Masechta Avodah Zarah, that from all of the empires and nations of the world, the one that will have the greatest world reputation throughout the whole world for power and success will be the seed of Esav, will be the Roman Empire. The reputation will go out through the whole world, the Roman civilization. We live today in the Roman civilization. You see today European nations, say, modern high technology. These are the Roman achievements. We can also see this from the fact that from all of the adversaries that we've had, we've never had one like the Roman civilization, like the Roman Empire. The first Golus, exile, when it came to Babel, that was a mere 70 years. Here, 2,000 years, we're still in the Roman exile. in Pirkei the Reb Lezer. Perek Lamed Hey. A few sidras further down, which states that Yaakov, when he was running away from Esav, he went and he was passing through Eretz Yisrael, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and he went to sleep and he had a dream. And what did he dream? He saw Sula Mutzavarza Vareisha Magia Shemaimo. He saw a ladder which had its base on the ground and it went all the way into the heavens. And Malachi Elakim Eilim Yadim Bay. And he saw the angels of Hashem were going up and down. Now what did this ladder represent? Hashem showed Yaakov the four empires as they would rule and as they would fall. He showed the Sar Malchus Babel, the angel of the empire of Babel, Ela Shivim Ukim. He climbed up this ladder 70 rungs, the gated, and then he fell. Herau Sar Malchus Modai. He showed him the angel of Modai, the Syrian Persian Empire, Ole Hamishim Ushnaim Ukim. He climbed up 52 rungs, the yared, and then he fell. Herau Sar Malchus Poras. He showed him the angel of the Greek Empire, Elamea Ushmanim Ukim. He climbed up 180 rungs, the yored, and then he fell. Herau Sar Malchus Edom. Then he showed him the angel of Edom, the angel of Esav. Ole, he went up, and he never saw him come down. He went up so high that he lost sight of him and he never saw him come down. And that angel said, I will climb up all the way to the heavens. And Yaakov trembled. A terror came over the town. He said, this is an empire that will climb up and up and up, and nobody will ever come and bring them down. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry. Im tagbia kenesher. This is a pasuk in Uvadja Aleph, pasuk Dalet. Im tagbia kenesher vim bein keichovim sim kinecho mishoma irit chonu mashem. If he will go up as an eagle and even make his nest in the between the stars of the heaven, from there I will bring him down. Now, but what did this represent? This represented that Yaakov was able to comprehend the limitations of every empire. But the limitations of Esav, his terror, he could not comprehend. See? Saw him go up, never saw him come down. And HaKadosh, what did it mean when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry, I will bring him down? It means only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring him down, no one else. See? Even if he will go and make his nests bein hakeichovim between the stars, misham orit chonu Hashem, I will cast him down. See? Which means only Hashem will be able to cast him down, no one else. So this shows the enormous strength of Esav. And we see this. We saw it with the Roman Empire, with Amalek. We saw it with the Germans, Yimach Shemam. See, their enormous terror and strength. We saw it with the Malachi Edom, with all of the Romans, kings and legions. And that still exists in the world. So from one aspect, this is the B'nai HaGodl, the great, great son. Yaakov was the B'nai HaKotn, the little son. But from another aspect, really, he's not so great. Why? because the Chazal, the sages say that whatever he possesses is not really his. He stole. He stole from others. Someone who has wealth, and this wealth was in the family, and was in the family for generations. Like, there were noble families, royal families. There were the Rothschilds. See? This is wealth. Let's say you take someone who's very, very wealthy, but he was a crook. He gained his wealth because he was a crook. This is not his wealth. It belongs to others. He stole it. The same with Esav. The Chazal tell us, Torhu Adav Avagazlanu, but a gazlan. All of this he stole from others. Where do we see that he stole from others? We once elaborated on this. We'll mention a little. You take, for example, European royalty, which comes from the Roman royalty. You take English royalty. They have a very, very sophisticated protocol when they anoint a king. Coronation. Someone once sent me a tape, an historian, on the traditions of their coronation. They use a flask of oil, which they say belonged to the house of David. They say that their kings come from the house of David. And there were ceremony after ceremony, protocol after protocol, entrenched in how the kings of David were anointed. So what are they doing? They're stealing from Israel. All of the pomp and circumstance. Another example. The Torah tells us that before the giving of the Torah, a person wanted to get married. People wanted to get married. Man would meet a woman. They decided to get married. He would take her to his home, consummate the wedding, the marriage, by living together. And this was marriage. Divorce is when they decided to separate from each other. This was divorce. This is Keter Matan Torah, before the giving of the Torah. This instituted legal marriage in the eyes of the Torah. And this is what is known as common law marriage today. When the Torah was given, Kodesh Baruch Hu told Israel, you are Mamleches Kahanim, the Gei Kodosh. You are a sacred nation. See? You have to make your marriages differently. What do? First, you must be Mekadesh. First, you must take your bride. And you marry her. You institute a legal marriage by giving her something of a value, and she becomes married to you, and with the sanctity of the chuppah, and the Chazal said with the brochas, talab le brocha asura le kenido, with the brochas, the achakach, and afterwards you take her home and they live together. There was a royal marriage in England a number of years ago. I watched part of it on television. I see they're doing what almost exactly what Claudia Schell was commanded to do. They made a whole chuppah with a gedushin, with brochas, and entourage, the shushvinim, the whole business. Where'd they get it from? With the rings. Then I looked up in an encyclopedia, wedding ring. It said an ancient Jewish tradition that the nations have adapted. Esav, Gazlan, who? He wants that kedusha. He wants that sanctity. But to him it's meaningless. Because after all, they remain the same adulterers. With it or without it, same thing. Torhu, Abel Gazlanhu. You take their laws. Roman law, Roman civilization, the ones who brought civilization to the world. I've had law students that would come to Shiurim. And I recall we were learning Baba Basra, this is laws in regarding to land rights. And when I used to learn over the Gemara, so one of the law students, he was a lawyer, used to tell me exactly, he says, this is exactly Roman Dutch law. He used to bring me the Roman Dutch law, the books, and we would compare it. Exactly. Exactly what the Gemara says, exactly the Talmud. With all of the ins and outs, and all of the intricacies. Exactly. Where'd they get it from? So I once spoke to a person who was, he was an expert in various religions. He told me that the Roman Dutch law, when it was written, some of the architects of that Roman Dutch law, they brought Jews who were mishumadim, who had converted to Christianity. And to write these laws and to copy it from the Talmud. It's a civilization. Again, though, it's an hypocrisy. Because Gazlanhu, after all the laws, they still remain the same butchers that they enshrine in the law. I've heard many times from historians. They were the ones who destroyed the Greek Empire. The Greek Empire were known for their beauty and their perfection and their enormous wisdom of science. I've heard many times from historians that they tried to duplicate what the Greek Empire did, but they did it in a very, very cheap fashion. For example, the famous Greek buildings would be made of pure marble. They would make it of plaster with a marble coating. They would steal many, many things from the Greek Empire and incorporate it into Roman culture. We don't have to go further than our famous, or should we say infamous, Olympics. See? Everybody knows of the Olympics. Everybody must have great admiration for the Olympics, after all, what it stands for. Unfortunately, even our own state of Israel also has great admiration for the Olympics. What does it stand for? The Olympics were the creation of the Greek Empire. whether you agreed with it or not, by them, it was an ideology. They used to dedicate their best children to the sport, and it became a life pursuit, and it became a pursuit for perfection of the body, perfection in athletics. And it was always sacrilegious if anyone should ever make any money on the Olympics, because it was perfection for the sake of perfection. This was the Olympics. What are the Olympics today? The Olympics today is is profit driven, money driven. How many people have been disqualified from the Olympics because they've been using illegal drugs? How many people have been disqualified from the Olympics because they've been paid? Every city in the world vies for the Olympics. Not only do they vie for the Olympics, but they put in millions and millions of dollars to bring the Olympics to their city. Why? Because of the profits and the business that will bring to the cities. This is the Greek Olympics. This is what the Olympics are. All the, you take the javelin, the marathon, these are all from the Greek terms, but it's been Romanized, driven by money. Take the wisdom today. Where does the wisdom come from? Why is it high tech? There's high tech because there are profits. It's money driven. The proof of the pudding is, if you have some high tech and you can't sell it, it'll vanish. Vanish in a day. Torhu avogazlanu. This is Esav. The Medrash Rabbah in Parshas told us Samachay Vov. The Medrash says, Vayikra es Esav b'no ha-godl. Like we mentioned before, Yitzchok and Rivka, they would refer to Esav as the great son. Omer b'lezer b'Reb Shimon. Reb Elezer b'Reb Shimon says this can be described with a parable. Levedina sh'Esav machtevis ankomon lemelech. There was a certain medina, a certain state, and an ankomon, these were the giants. Those sons that were of enormous physical strength, they were like giants, they would be written on the register for the king's army. The king had, it was the king's guard. The king's guard was the elite. So who had the schus to go and become part of the elite's group of the king's guard? The ankomon. Those who were of enormous physical structure and strength. There was a woman, and she never had a son that was a midget. But because of her great love for him, she used to call him Mikrei Lefreis. That means my son of great stature. She gave him a name which meant great stature and as fast as a deer. One day she complained to the king's servants and she said, my son, Mikrei Lefreis, why don't you take him to the king's guard? Omru im beinecho Mikrei Lefreis, beineinu hu nanish benanosim. They said, maybe to you he's of enormous strength and of speed, but to us he's a midget. Kach, Oviv Keresh Godl, Vayikras Esav Benaya Godl, Yitzchok called him my great son. Imei Keresh Godl, Rivka called him, as it states, Vatikach Rivka's big days of Benoha Godl Achamudais, Rivka called him the great son. Omele HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Im Be'enechem Hu Godl, if in your eyes he's great and strong, Be'enai Hu Koten, in my eyes he's very, very small. Shenemar, and this quotes the Posuk, from, again from Uvadja Aleph, Perek Aleph Posuk, Beis, Hine Koten Nesaticho Bagoyim, Bozri Atomi Od. You will be made into the little one, the small one of the nations. Bozri Atomi Od. You are very small and insignificant and very disgraceful. Now, from here we understand why he was symbolized as a bird. A bird compared to an animal is of no strength. Even though that he was to become from the strongest empire in the world, but in essence, in truth, that's not his strength. He's a gosling. Whatever he possesses, he will steal from others. Actually, Rashi brings in Uvadja that one of the reasons why he is such a disgraceful nation, so small, Shein Lake Savaloshim, because he has no language of his own. He has no alphabet of his own. And this is interesting because actually the other nations were from the original nations, so they had their own languages. Esav really came from Yitzchok, from Abraham, from Shem. So he doesn't even have his own language, doesn't have his own alphabet. In other words, his whole culture is stolen. Therefore, in essence, if we look at him through the eyes of deceit, through the eyes of falsehood, he's the greatest in the world. If we look at him through the eyes of truth, Kotanato Bagoyim, you are the smallest of the nations. Therefore he was symbolized as a bird in regards to the others. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, did not command, did not instruct Avram to divide him up, because to divide something, that's a sign of chashivas, that's a sign of a value of importance. What do you divide? You divide something which has some value to it, that has something to it. Like the Gemara brings in Baba Basra, Chosa Sheyesh Badin Chalunka. The only time you can divide a piece of land, if after you divide it, there's still something left. But he was not even deserving of being divided. There's one more medrash in Lech Lecho, which the medrash states, this is Oshkov. V'hine ema chashecha gedol nefeles olov. A great fear and a great darkness fell on Avraham. So the Medrash darshans each one in regards to the four nations. Ema zubavel. This terror refers to the Babylonians. Chashecha, the darkness, refers to the Greek Empire, or to Modai, the Syrian. Gedola, the greatness, refers to the Greek Empire. Nopheles, fell upon him, that refers to the Roman Empire. Now that perhaps can mean that in the end of days he will fall the hardest, because like we learned before, every nation went up so many steps and then they fell. Esav went higher than all of the other nations. And then in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cast him down. He will fall harder than all of the other nations, and especially because he has no essence. Everything of his is not his, is stolen. However, all of this cannot take place in our times. Only in the time when the Melech HaMashiach comes. It states that Vayirer Ha'ayit, the vulture came down and wanted to eat up these pieces of the animals. Vayashiv Esom Avram, and Avram chased it away. Rashi brings why. See, he brings because it states this is a sign that David will come to destroy them. But heaven will not allow him until the Melech HaMashiach comes. And the reason for that is because this is the Alma de Shikra. This is the world of falsehood. This is a world where we do not have a clear vision. And therefore, in this world, Esav is the Bnei HaGodl. He is the great, mighty son. Yaakov, who was the Ish Tam, Yosheva Oli, who was the person of integrity, the person of truth, who would bring down Torah and mitzvahs to the world, give the world a conscience, give the world a direction. That is distorted in this world, because this world is the world of sheker, the world of falsehood. So therefore in this world he is the Beno HaKotan, he is the little son. But when the Melech HaMashiach comes and he will sort out the world, he will bring the world back to its truth. So there will be Nisgala, there will be revealed who is the Bnei HaGodl and who is the Bnei HaKotan. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. He said that Im Tagbiya Kenesher Vim Ben Kehovim Simki Necho Mishoma Yiritcho Num Hashem. Even if you will try to climb up to the heavens and you will make your nests amongst the stars, I will cast you down, Nefeles. In a cotton nesaticho bagoyim bozri atom yod. You will be the smallest of all the nations. Bozri atom yod, you will be the most insignificant and disgraceful one of all the nations. So this is an explanation into this dual power, dual aspects of Esav. Each side, who was the person of deceit, and which we see his enormous power in this world, but we all hope that we will soon see that he is the Kotn Shebagoi, the smallest and most insignificant of the nations.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.